The principal function of human life is self-knowing awareness. It is that by which awareness knows itself. Without the self-knowing awareness of a human being, awareness cannot know itself. So that's the primary purpose. And once we come to understand and realize that about ourselves, that we're entirely inseparable from that awareness, just like the color blue is inseparable from the sky. Once we understand that and really directly experience it for ourselves, that is the beginning. That is the beginning of living as self-knowing awareness. But that's only the beginning. And this is the way it's been throughout time. As long as there have been human beings who have realized themselves to be self-knowing awareness, this has been the first step to simply directly experience that we are self-knowing awareness. So it, rather than it being a destination or an arrival point, that is the first step. And that's very important to recognize. And it's something that we really don't hear talked about that much, especially in the West. We're all Westerners, aren't we? So, you know, once that's realized, then we have an opportunity for fully manifest enlightenment. And fully manifest enlightenment is not just this initial realization that we are awareness only, but it's the realization of that with great distinction and particularity. What we were talking about yesterday, that there's a wondrousness about it. There is a wonderment to living as a free being, where there is, one could call it an expansion or a magnification of that in every moment. I just call it wonder. It's simply wonder. Where ultimate reality is realized in great detail and nuance. And of nuance and capacity to communicate that. So first there is this realization of awareness, self-knowing awareness. And then there is the growing realization of what that means exactly. You know, that it does mean that there's the direct experience of that awareness being empty. Empty. Empty of any characteristics. Like a mirage. There's the realization that it is pure, that this awareness is pure, originally pure, primordially pure, fundamentally pure. And there is the realization that it is wholly positive, entirely positive. So it's called pure awareness because it is originally pure, not as in pure versus impure, but pure as the original essence. Pure as the original essence of everything is pure. And then it's realized also that this is unchanging. So rather, the human experience of that then is that it's unchanging in all of the three times of the day, waking, dreaming, and sleeping. This lucidity of awareness is absolutely obvious. So this luminosity or lucidity of awareness is then another distinction of what that is, that it is absolutely lucid, absolutely unchanging at all times. And then based upon that, and you can, you know in yourselves, and you can know too in hearing me communicate about it, that this is very profound. You know, who we are as human beings is very profound, because rather than this being something that is rare or only for the elect, it's the birthright of everyone. It, just as awareness is our fundamental nature, so Buddhahood is our fundamental nature. That can never be taken away from us. You know, every subatomic particle of our being is Buddha nature. So, you know, when we see ourselves in that way, rather than taking ourselves to be some story about ourselves that we've been focusing our awareness on, because really we only have two choices. Either we take the self-knowing awareness and we focus it on a bunch of points of view, which are all points of view of that pure view of awareness. They're never separate from it, even if we have a story of great pain, suffering, calamity, life is an ordeal. They're all still pure awareness. It's all included and contained within our own awareness. Each perception, no matter what it is rooted in that awareness. But each of these perceptions is, it's like a mirage. You know, if we came upon a mirage in the desert and we looked at all of its elements and we said, okay, there's the sand and there's the well and there's the young woman in a little tiny skirt serving cocktails and cooling beverages and all these elements of a mirage, no matter how much we wanted them to be so, none of them would ever be so, because they're entirely empty. So no matter what the label is that we put on pure space, it's never anything other than pure space. And this too we realize at some time. At some point we realize that everything, no matter what it is a wholly positive basic space that is the basic space of all perceptions, the basic space of all points of view. So we could call that the substance of who we are. Wholly positive basic space, the wholly positive basic space of everything is what we are. And the functioning of that substance is awareness. It is awareness. So, you know, once we realize the great profundity of who we are, then we find that enlivened within our body, speech, and mind, but not our body, speech, and mind as we may have been thinking of it. The body, speech, and mind of an individual who has a fragmented existence that's separate from everyone else, but the body, speech, and mind of this wholly positive basic space that is inclusive of all phenomena, inclusive of everything, then that is our realization of our true body, speech, and mind. We never have any individual body, speech, and mind. To say that we have an individual body, speech, and mind is just to make up a story about what's going on with our awareness. And, you know, so the great simplicity of realizing who we are is simply to directly experience that we are this awareness that is inclusive of everything, and then allow the wonder of that to unfold. And it will. As long as we continue to acknowledge it as who we are, it will continue to unfold. But if we say, oh no, I couldn't possibly be a great Buddha, or I couldn't possibly compare myself to this great one or that great one. If we go off on that track, then we're not acknowledging ourselves as we are. Because anyone we have in our perception as a great being, where does that perception originate? That perception originates in us. We're the root of it. We're the root of it, thus that not only implies, but it is a direct statement of who we are. So if we recognize a Buddha, say the greatest Buddha who ever was, Samantabhadra, Shakyamuni Buddha, whoever it is, that's who we are. You know, so when we begin to realize our enlightened body, speech, and mind, all of the activities of our body, speech, and mind become extremely potent. Extremely potent. That means that more and more every thought we have, every word that comes out of our mouths, every small action of our body is an emanation of great benefit. And how does that occur? Well, first of all, we have benefited ourselves in a very direct way by acknowledging ourselves as we are. Only when we do that, when we acknowledge ourselves as we are and we give ourselves that great benefit, can then we possibly be of benefit to anyone else. So once that great benefit is given to ourselves, we give the gift of ourselves to ourselves, then this emanation of great benefit for the whole begins to take place. So the epitome of that, or the pinnacle of that, so to speak, is the magnificence of being what in the Buddhist canon is called Buddhified. Isn't that a great term? Hey, I'm Buddhified. So, and this is the case of all of us. You know, every subatomic particle of our being is Buddhified. If we wanted to say one thing about ourselves and we wanted to boil it down to one thing that was absolutely true about us, we could say that we're aware that every subatomic particle of our being is Buddhified. Then we'd be talking about ourselves as we really are. We all endeavor to be honest. Well, that would be rigorous honesty. That would be entirely rigorous honesty. Anything else is a pretend honesty. You know, it's some kind of a charade, a story about what honesty is. So you see, when we discover that true honesty, then we live directly from that. But, you know, we don't have to call it anything like honesty or truth or anything. We can just, because really what is doesn't have any special characteristics. And it doesn't have any speculation about being anything or not. The evidence of it is this magnificent quality of great benefit for the whole. And that great benefit expresses itself, the full evidence of it. And this, again, I must say, it's true for every single one of us. So, you know, when we allow ourselves to be who we are, we each have the opportunity to live the full evidence of this in every moment. And the epitome or pinnacle of that is magnificence, the magnificence of being who we are, the magnificence of great blessing for everyone, the magnificence of the use of body, speech, and mind in the way that they are intended to be used. The capacity to confer or transmit the direct introduction to awareness to others through spoken and written communication. And the magnificence of also being able to support people in stabilizing that so that it is a reality. Not just this initial realization of awareness, but the full realization of complete enlightenment. You see, what has always been called for many thousands of years, prior to Shakyamuni Buddha, there was a whole tradition of Buddhas in Tibet that stretches back 17,000 years. And the what is called bodhicitta is to live one's life, every expression of one's body, speech, and mind for the complete enlightenment of all beings. So the complete enlightenment of all beings, as you can see, is very distinct from saying, I'm going to live my life to lessen the suffering of all beings. To dedicate and devote one's life to the complete enlightenment of all beings is very distinct from lessening suffering. And then two, to know what complete enlightenment is distinct from saying, oh, awareness is enlightenment. So you see, we should never sell ourselves short, as I say, or hold anything back, and just completely have faith. This is the true meaning of faith, that we are who we are, and just allow that to unfold magnificently in ourselves as it comes more and more into full expression. You know, it's just like, say, we found an incredible treasure chest. My dreams are all like these incredible allegories of something much better than anything I could ever drum up, you know, sitting around twiddling my thumbs. All of the dream is a magnificent expression, you know. Anything that can be imagined, what enlightened body, speech, and mind is way beyond anything that could ever be imagined. So, you know, once I had a dream, this was a very long time ago, and I was on a cruise ship, and I dove into the sea, and it was pitch black. I couldn't see a thing. I was out in the middle of the ocean, and I dove in, and I was swimming in this blackness. I didn't know whether I was up, down, sideways, or what was going on. And I was swimming along and kind of feeling around me, and all of a sudden I felt something. So I got this thing and I brought it back up and I put it on the ship, and it was a treasure chest. So I opened up the treasure chest, and the treasure chest was filled with jewels. But see, the jewels could only be taken out one at a time, you know, or several at a time. It was like a bottomless jewel chest. There was just more and more and more in there. And so finding the first few jewels is realizing our awareness. And then the more we get into that treasure chest, you know, the more and more jewels there are. This is the reality of our precious human existence. So you see, that's why I asked if you had 6 months. Because it is so key that we talk openly about these things at this point in human history, to realize that we are greatly empowered beyond our wildest imagining. You know, that any kind of power we've ever heard about as existing in anyone else, that all these are our powers too. And you know, why is that important? Because we're on the brink of disaster. You know, our world is, the planet Earth is on the brink of disaster. In many ways, we all know that. And to one degree or another feel helpless or powerless about that, no matter how much we do. But what we can do is realize our own nature, our true nature. You see, only through the realization for human beings of realizing ourselves as we are, can we really have the force of turning the tide. So it's very important. It's of utmost importance. We have all of the answers within us. All of the answers, no matter what they are, beyond any solution making that might come from points of view. And all of this comes about through rest, not through a great deal of effort in doing. To rest naturally in the immediacy of each perception. To realize the freedom and the immediacy of every single perception. To realize ourselves to be the vivid wakefulness that is the core, the essence of every single perception. That's complete freedom. The immediacy of complete freedom. That's the true sadhana. That is the true sadhana. Sometimes people say, oh, well, this is so easy, it seems like cheating. But this is the true sadhana. There is a great deal of rigor in the sadhana of freedom in immediate perception. So it is at once easy, it is at once simple, it is at once extremely rigorous, and it is at once extremely freeing, radically freeing. When there's freedom in immediate perception, that's a freedom we can count on. How can we count on it? Well, if we have some idea about what awakening is, then we might have something come up in life, great physical suffering or whatever it is, that we can't face because we've had some kind of idea about what awakening is, and all of a sudden we're faced with some perceptions that are outside the scope of that, and we feel like we're left high and dry. But our freedom in immediate perception is guaranteed, so to speak. We're always entirely free in immediate perception. And when we exercise this, our freedom in immediate perception, we become prepared for all perceptions, no matter what they are, no matter what kind of calamity we may have to face. We're entirely free in the immediacy of that. Because we haven't set up a caste system of points of view. These points of view are good and holy and sacred. These points of view don't matter. And these points of view over here are bad guys, that need to be eradicated. Freedom is freedom in all perceptions. Freedom in all perceptions. So you see, when we hear terms like the exhaustion of phenomenon, or the cessation of phenomenon, the cessation of thinking, the exhaustion of the ordinary thinking process, sometimes that is misinterpreted as the end of thought, a thought-free state. But a thought-free state is just another point of view. It's a state, it's an experience, but it's not freedom. The more we realize freedom in immediate perception, the more we realize the exhaustion of ordinary thinking, the cessation of ordinary thinking. And this is something that absolutely cannot be described. Because at the same time that there is absolutely no thinking or thought or point of view that has ever occurred in holy, positive, basic space, there is a great abundance of perceptions. Every single one of them empty, pure, and holy, positive. Every single one of them, the fully blown out magnificent expression of enlightened body, speech, and mind. So you see, everything is contained in everything. Everything is contained in everything. You could even call this the non-duality that is beyond non-duality because it doesn't really have anything that can describe it. But you see, whenever non-duality is talked about, The true expressiveness of non-duality is this complete original purity of every single perception. That every single perception, no matter what it is the natural presence of complete and total timeless freedom. So there's nothing that needs to be eradicated, nothing that needs to be changed, nothing that needs to be done. Rest. Rest naturally without seeking anything. Rest naturally for short moments repeated many times until it becomes permanent. That's the freedom that can be counted on. I've seen it over and over again, you know, first of all in my own direct experience and then with so many people over the last 24 years. 24 years ago today, in fact. So, yeah, I'm not a new kid on the block. Did that answer your question, Terry? Got something more about that?
No.
No.
Does this awareness arise to my ego? Do I feel any awareness of this awareness? Is it as it blossoms and then does it?
Oh, I do. Very good question. Let's call it awareness as awareness rather than awareness of awareness, because awareness of awareness implies a perceiver and perceived. Do you see what I'm saying? Just that subtle distinction of the preposition, awareness as awareness. So just for a moment, directly experience yourself as being aware, just aware. And then in that awareness, visualize all the letters of the alphabet, A through Z, just, you know, dancing around in there. And then realize that all of those letters of the alphabet are occurring within awareness. They're included and contained within your awareness. Do you see that? Do you experience that for yourself? Now know that no matter how you configure those letters into what words, all the words in the dictionary, they're still just perceptions within awareness. You see, you could configure them in any way, but they're nothing, really. They're all made up. They're an illusion. They're elements. They're all elements of a mirage. Every single one of those letters is a complete mirage. So, say you put those letters together, E-G-O, into ego. It's a mirage. You see, there is no entity called an ego that's out to get you or anybody else. It's a convention. The ego is simply a convention of dualistic perception. So this is the most important thing of all for you to realize about yourself, that you are this direct experience of awareness in which all the letters occur. Simple as that. That's the foundation. You start there, you uphold yourself as that in every single moment by resting all of your perceptions as that basis that is inclusive of everything. And all other things unfold from that. You can take your life anywhere you want it to go. You take that and you first of all commit that to your own welfare, to your own well-being, because it has to start there. Great compassion for yourself. And as all these things arise within you, you know, all the letters are put together in all these different ways, anger, sadness, depression, physical pain, whatever they are, you continue to rest as that underlying basis, knowing that all of them, no matter what they are, they're a magnificent display, but they have no substance in and of themselves. They have no independent origin. They have no independent nature. They exist in, of, as, and through awareness only. So when the focus is placed on the arrangement of the letters, then a life of pain, suffering, with intermittent happiness is realized. When awareness is relaxed into its basis as each perception arises, There's total freedom as that awareness. Freedom in the immediacy of all perceptions, no matter how the letters are arranged or rearranged or strung together or wadded up into a ball or, you know, whatever it is, it's complete freedom. A complete freedom in immediate perception that can carry us through all of life and death. See, if we're free in the immediacy of every single perception during our lives, when we're faced with the perception of death, we're free in that perception as well. We support ourselves so greatly, and we support each other. The more we rest in the immediacy of our own perceptions, the more we have an unbounded compassion for everyone. Because the more we realize how much suffering we've caused ourselves, the more we see how there are many that are bound by this suffering, seemingly bound. But at the same time, we realize that just as we're free, they're free. They're totally free. When I look around, I never see people as a big clot of points of view. Just don't see that. I see people as totally free. Everything is totally free. No matter what it is, everything is totally and completely free. You could never get me to back off that. And anyone who has known me for more than 5 minutes can tell you that that's true. Is there a Kleenex nearby? Did that answer your question about that?
Yeah, I find it quite confusing, all the non-duality. It just seems there's definitely some sort of bizarre entity sitting here. It doesn't really exist, but it's a very powerful being. Because obviously it's been my whole life, for being an individual.
Well, that feeling, as you call it,
yeah,
that's right in there.
Underlying anxiety that's with you all the time.
Oh, that's beautifully spoken. You know what that is, that underlying anxiety? It's the renunciation of your true nature. That's what it is. It really is. I can guarantee you that it's so, because I've seen it. I've seen so many people completely relieved of it, including myself. As long as we take ourselves to be a bunch of points of view, we're going to feel crummy. And every single person I've ever met, that manifests as an underlying anxiety that's felt at the heart. And the more that anyone rests as awareness, the more that dissipates. So you see, that's the only way out of it. You can never get out of it with Ativan, Valium, whatever it is, you know, or martinis, or pot smoking, or heroin, or, you know, if you want to go for the big guns like heroin, none of it can ever get you out of it more than momentarily. It may seem to be dissipated, but it's always going to come back with a huge force, because you see, the cause is seeing ourselves as a point of view rather than seeing ourselves as awareness. So it's just, even when that anxiety comes up, just rest and know that as you've spelled out all those letters into this anxiety that's always there, that that's just an appearance. It's a temporary appearance. If you take it to be real, if you say this mirage is real, then it will seem real. And you'll spend the rest of your life chasing a mirage. But if you rest naturally without seeking anything, if you just rest naturally in the source of your being, the anxiety will dissipate until it's completely gone.
It seems to have got really good at just ignoring it then. It seems to have sort of gone a bit.
Hmm?
Just why, you know, speaking about it makes it a bit better.
Speaking about it
makes it less lesson.
It does. It does lessen it, because sitting here, you're acknowledging who you truly are. I really see that in you, and I feel it. You are really interested in this, beyond interested. You're committed to knowing more about this, to knowing yourself as you are. So as you acknowledge that in yourself and you just rest in that acknowledgement, see right away, there's something you can count on. It's not a temporary remedy. It's a very powerful remedy. The remedy of your true self. Something more, Adrian? Fire away, ask all your questions.
That might be inappropriate, but I had a dream. We were talking about dreams last night about you. I never met you, I've never seen you. And you were giving a talk, because I've been to a few other satsangs. And you gave me enlightenment like that. So in my dream, I was going, oh, this is it. But then nothing had happened at all. And I was sitting there, and I'm going, well, this is ridiculous. I'm enlightened.
And nothing happened.
Nothing like that, and that was my dream. And I woke up, and I thought that was quite amusing, because I think a lot of people are taught that enlightenment is like waking up from a dream.
Yeah, exactly. It was all played out right there. Well, this is very good that you're having dreams like that. So you had that dream at night, now you're having this dream today. begin with the end of mind. Begin with the end of ego. See, that's what you're doing right here. You're beginning with the end of ego. Most places you go, it's talked about that the ego has to be crushed over time or something like that. But here we begin with the end of ego. So the first time you come, the ego's gone. Which, it makes it very easy. May I talk about you too? When I first met Kathy and Johan, they talked a lot about their mind, you know, and what their mind was doing and their psychology. And I just had to laugh because I knew, you know, that within a day or two, they would have no mind or psychology. Well, you know, When we realize that that our awareness really is the basis of all of our perceptions, then we just have so much freedom, because all these things we've taken ourselves to be, we have complete release from that. We just like that, you know, we release ourselves into infinite space, the infinite space of our own awareness. You know, we're the only ones who can do that. It's just, you know, I'm one of your perceptions.
That's what I've been reading a lot of Wayne Wu Wei's. Nothing, everything is my perception, everything is me.
Exactly.
But I still haven't accepted that. Do you see what I mean? It's still the same.
I would say you are accepting that.
Yeah.
So that, you know, this is important, rather than saying you haven't accepted it, to say, well, I am accepting that. You know, that's very distinct. So there's no one who can really support us in this other than ourselves. If we won't support ourselves, a teacher can't do anything for us, you know, can't. We have to be willing to receive what's offered. You know, so here I give these talks, and then we also have a written teaching that is very methodical. There's no way to ever believe your point of view. with this teaching. No possible way. And in many teachings, all of this is talked about as a grand philosophy, some kind of philosophical overlay, but there's no way to gather that philosophical overlay or grand perception, shall we say, into the particularity of one's own points of view. But our teaching here does that. It shows you so clearly that you are who you are, that there's no way to step away from it. And it's also so totally clear that you're entirely responsible. You know, each one of us is, who else would be responsible for our perceptions after all? How could we possibly blame anyone else for our perceptions? No matter what it is, you know, like sometimes people say, oh, well, you're from America, what do you think of George Bush? Or, well, you know, George Bush is one of my perceptions, that's what I know about George Bush. But you see, unless I know that George Bush is a perception, and as a perception is rooted in my awareness that George Bush is a mirage, that he has no substance or independent origin that is separate from awareness. See, I have to know all of that about George Bush in order to ever be able to act effectively from enlightened body, speech, and mind. If I just say George Bush is a jerk, or I say George Bush is awareness only, I've adopted an extreme either way. But if I understand every perception in general and in detail, then I see everything as it is. That's what omniscience is. It's to be all cognizing, all knowing. In other words, every perception, no matter what it is known as it is. Those are three very important words, as it is. So this is what Wei Wu Wei is talking about. And you know, we don't have to talk about this matter in any way other than it being a simple human matter. We don't have to talk about things like, it's beyond speculation, so to talk about gradual enlightenment versus sudden enlightenment or anything, that's just more point of view. True, complete enlightenment is absent of speculation. So it's even absent of a speculation about it being sudden or gradual, because the only freedom is in immediate perception. That's the only freedom that ever is. The single blissful expanse.
Just read that he said enlightenment is the freedom from the concept of enlightenment, something like that. I think it appeals to your intellect, which is bad, I suppose. Wei Wu Wei is writing. So you almost understand what he's saying, but you can't, because he's talking about something you can't explain. But it keeps dragging you along. It's great. I really enjoy that. It's unexplainable, you said earlier, didn't you? You can't explain instead.
Absent of characteristics. Yet it's demonstrated in a human being in very specific ways, so. Everyone here, you know, we're all interested in the same thing, complete enlightenment. So it's good to know what complete enlightenment is. It's just like if you go to a store to buy a flat screen, a flat panel TV set, you want to know what it is you're buying. If someone shows you a little black and white TV, one of those tiny screens in a box like this, you're going to know it's not a a flat panel TV set. Even my 87-year-old mother has a flat panel TV set. Something more, Adrian? Not for the moment. Do you have any questions, Annette? Shoshana? Everything you see is Ramana Maharshi, that's all I have to say.
But there are certain energies that you're more attracted to.
Hmm. Well,
feeling more as a
Uh-huh.
And he happens his form, but it's not his form, it's nothing to do with his form, it's the energy from the eyes. I only see it through the eyes.
Well, to keep it very simple, the eyes see nothing. You know, what eyes are seeing in a dream? When you go to sleep at night, what eyes are seeing in a dream? It's only awareness. So you see, it's... Let me put it this way. Like a friend of mine says, dead gurus don't kick ass. So, you know, we can have all kinds of feelings about all kinds of beings everywhere. But the most important gift Ramana Maharshi could ever give anyone, and all he ever wanted to give anyone, is for everyone to realize the same thing that he realized. And what he realized is that there is no separateness. There is no separateness whatsoever. And when you look, any perception that arises, so you said everything is through the eyes, well, you know, it's only awareness that sees, it's only awareness that hears, it's only awareness that tastes, it's only awareness that touches. And if you want to call it somebody, like a great being, you're welcome to do that. But if you want to keep it totally simple, and get more and more of the direct experience of what Ramana Maharshi realized, then rely on your own awareness. That's just what he did from the moment he woke up when he was 16. He didn't go sit in Ramana Ashram when he was 16. He lived for 25 years in a cave before he ever began to share with people at all. He lived in that cave while he explored the treasure chest of his perceptions. And then when the time was right, he came into the setting of the ashram. So, rely on your own awareness.
Well, I felt he was showing me myself.
Hmm?
I felt he was showing me myself. And this was the heart of me, for me to accept.
It is. It's very difficult for many people to accept, but we have to accept it about ourselves. We have no opportunity or hope of enlightenment whatsoever unless we accept it about ourselves. We have to accept it about ourselves. If we refused, any moment that we refuse to acknowledge it, it's just like what Adrian said, there's that tightness that anxiety. So we can't think about ourselves as being somebody alone. We have to rest as the essence of that. You know, rest is in the immediate perception of that. So when we're directly introduced to that in some way, then all that direct introduction is an opportunity to rest as that in every single moment. It's the opportunity to rest as that in every single moment, and that's up to us. We have to be able to give ourselves that. Unless we do that, unless we really allow ourselves to be completely free, no matter what point of view is arising, then we're not really realizing anything. You know, we've just made up a story about what awakening is. We've made up a story about what freedom is. We've made up a story about what's going on here. The great reality, the ultimate reality of a human being as the basic space of all points of view is that there is timeless freedom in that point of view. And that timeless freedom is rooted in our own awareness. It's never been anywhere else. It's never been rooted anywhere else. We're the only ones who can rest. Now, if we don't know what our own belief systems are, and we don't know what our own patterns of points of view are, then it can be very difficult for us to rest because we haven't really examined that. We haven't inquired into it. You know, we might have a lot of pain and wait and think, oh, you know, maybe I'll be one of the lucky ones to a sudden enlightenment. Like Ramana Maharshi had. But even Ramana, anyone who ever wakes up has some period of inquiry before that, just like he did. So what was he doing then? He was looking into his own belief systems about death. He was afraid to die, and then so he pretended he was dying, and he pretended he was dead. He inquired into his belief system about death. So the teaching, the Great Freedom Teaching, supports us in that, looking into our own belief systems in great particularity, the ones, you know, that we don't even know we have. Those are the ones that can blindside us from time to time, you know. But when we know what they are, they can't blindside us anymore. It's impossible. So you see, this is true seeing. We could call this true seeing. You know, it's complete relaxation in the moment without any pretense. It doesn't need to look any particular way. You know, you don't have to wear a white loincloth and no shoes for the rest of your life to be Ramana Maharshi. Everyone is Ramana Maharshi and beyond. So, you know, the any other great being you've ever perceived, their message to you is also the same. Rest as your own awareness. Know that when you rest as awareness, when you rest naturally in the moment, in the immediacy of every single perception, you are completely united with Ramana Maharshi. And everyone else, for that matter. You know, the scrawny dog going down the street and Ramana Maharshi are absolutely non-different.
Mm-hmm. Persons I'm more close to than to other persons.
Mm-hmm.
It's
Well, who knows? You know, an attraction, no matter what it is just, it's a point of view. So we just have to rest as awareness and then use some discernment and discrimination. When we rest as awareness, it really heightens the less of a story we have about everything, the more discernment and discrimination we have. The more discernment and discrimination we have, the more we can identify someone who can truly support us in complete enlightenment, if that's what we want. You know, it's really very straightforward. This matter of spiritual seeking, so to speak, isn't any different, really, than any other business proposition. If you want to buy something in particular, you want to make sure you're going somewhere where you can buy it, so to speak, where you can get it. And by that standard, almost all offerings of enlightenment are dismal failures as a business. So, you know, this isn't any different. There's no category. As long as we think that there is a category for enlightenment that's called spirituality or religion, it's going to be very difficult for us to realize complete enlightenment. Because, you know, say we wanted to put enlightenment into a category and we wanted to find its most basic category, we'd have to say its most basic category is human being. Because a human being is the only being that has self-knowing awareness. So that's the basic category. Let's start there with what can be, we can show ourselves about ourselves in that way. We are aware. There's no human being anywhere who can say that they're not aware. And that awareness is crystalline. It's crystalline. It's absolutely pristine. In every single moment. It's never anything other than that. No matter what kind of a story we want to make up about it. So, we want to know, you know, if we really are committed to complete enlightenment, we really want to know that the people we choose to support us in that can really support us in that. For example, let's liken it to a business again. You know, when we go to buy something in a business, how do we go to that business? We end up going to that business because we've heard from other satisfied customers that they got what they wanted and they were provided customer satisfaction that went along with it, you know. So not only did they get what they wanted, but, you know, in whatever they bought, say my little Sony thing here, whatever it is, that there was backup support for that. Not only was somebody willing to sell me a bill of goods, in other words, my Sony recorder, but they were going to be there in every single moment with me to make sure that I was completely satisfied with my gizmo. Or, you know, whatever it is I bought. So this, you know, I'm talking about discernment and discrimination now in a very practical way. Because discernment and discrimination is very practical. Complete enlightenment is not some kind of airy-fairy la-la land. It really isn't. And even if it were, humankind has no time for that. All of these great beings who are dead, so to speak, now are all alive right here as everyone's sitting in this room. So, you know, the expression of enlightenment, whatever it is throughout human history, has always been beautifully and specifically tailored to the contemporary circumstances of the time. So, you know, say Ramana Maharshi were alive today, and he is, he wouldn't be expressing his realization, it's likely, in the way that he did then. You know, when he lived, he was very limited by many constraints. First of all, he had no shoes. Never in his entire life did he own a pair of shoes. So, you know, he couldn't go anywhere, really. He didn't have a bicycle. And when he finally met people who did have bicycles and then other conveyances, he didn't really want to go anywhere. He lived in Tiruvannamalai for 25 years and he didn't really want to go anywhere. He just wanted to sit there. And so, you know, he was very limited by many constraints. He didn't have a telephone, he didn't have internet access. So, you know, he had very limited capacity to even have anything he said ever recorded. There were no recording devices. There are no recordings whatsoever of his voice. There are some film images, but no recordings whatsoever of his voice. So anything that he ever said was written down by someone else. It was never even written by Ramana Maharshi. So, you know, what am I saying there? Well, we really have no idea what Ramana Maharshi said, other than that we know he was a great being. You know he was a great being. We can see that when we look at his picture and we hear the stories of people who talk about how much they were served by him in one way or another. So you see, today, here we are, and we are aware, and our enlightened body, speech, and mind isn't limited like it was 50 years ago by all these constraints. Now our enlightened body, speech, and mind has a magnificent display that's different than that. Now, you know, we're a global human family in a very tangible way. We can instantaneously communicate with many, many people whose bodies we'll never see. We're just aware, you know, we're aware of ourselves as this electronic body. Well, you know, what is that electronic body, speech, and mind? It's the luminosity of awareness. So you see, this is the form in which it's being communicated today. It's just like in the Great Freedom Teaching, we have face-to-face meetings like this, but we are also very sophisticated technologically. We use the internet extensively, we use email, we give the teaching in teleconferencing calls that are worldwide. People like Kathy and Johan here in India join in with teleconferencing worldwide, where Great Freedom Teachers gather together every week in a teaching call with me. So you see, whatever it is, it's communicated in the form of the time. And we're very blessed, we're extremely blessed to have such ready access to the reality of our own being. We're extremely blessed. Sometimes it can even be a little overwhelming because we have so much information about awakening that it may be difficult to discern